Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Matt Kahn. He's a spiritual healer, an intuitive healer, a speaker. He has recently issued a CD called Awakening the Earth Angel in You, which I believe should have been launched in September, and he's in the course of publishing his first book. So, may I welcome you to the program, Matt?
Oh, thanks for having me, my pleasure to be here.
We did not have a connection.
What's that?
Well, I'm not sure what's happened. I hope the listeners can hear me. We've obviously lost the connection by the sound of it.
Are you there, Mike?
I'm not sure if it's at my end or where we've actually lost it from.
I'm here, Mike, if you can hear me.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I invited you into the program, and I thought we'd lost you for a minute.
No, never lost. Just always here.
Right. Now, just for starters, I've gathered that you've just got back from India. Presumably, that was related to the work you do. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we recently just got back from India. My partner Julie and I just went there for 3 weeks on a little spiritual sabbatical, and we went there to chant and to really immerse ourselves in the culture. And the chanting trip was actually a vacation for us, but of course everything about India was putting into practice all of what we teach and live with in every single moment. Of course, just in India, the energy making everything just a little bit more intense and in your face. And you know, in every single moment, there is something, you know, you can confront in India, whether it's the senses being put into a compromising position because of all the different noises and sounds and all the different things coming at you at once. And what I really realized in India and what was truly a blessing in India was as much as all these things were happening around me, there was just the profound realization that the truest part of me was totally okay with it. I was able just to roll with it and laugh with it. And what was one of those profound experiences for me in India was being face-to-face with people begging me for money, and my natural reaction was the humility of thanking them for incarnating as a beggar to be one of my teachers, to teach me more perspective of generosity.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds a wonderful break for you. Coming to your life story, as it were, I think for an eight-year-old, which was your experience, it must have been very unusual to find yourself out of the body. I gather that was perhaps the start of your path leading to your present interest, although you may not have been aware of it then. Tell us about that experience, what actually happened.
Well, when I was 8 years old, and first of all, you know, as an eight-year-old child, I remember being a child who was always constantly confronted and filled with fear and anxiety about just about everything. And one of the things I knew I was always afraid of was being lost in a place I didn't know where I was and that type of thing. And when I went to sleep one night as an eight-year-old child, like any other night, and I found myself in the most amazing garden that unfortunately words can't even do justice to. I mean, the colors in this garden were so vivid and so bright that I've never quite been able to see anything on this earth plane as bright as these colors and as these bright spectrums of colors were, you know, exploding from these flowers and trees. It emanated this sense of such love that there wasn't even a time for me to actually even be scared. I actually remember the first thought I had in the garden when I was there was the thought of, I don't know where I am and I should be scared. Like I was remembering being Matt and saying, Matt should be scared right now, but I am held in such a level of love that I was able to see those thoughts as an eight-year-old, and at the same time I wasn't connected to the emotional response of what I remember it usually feeling like. And I remember held in this level of love, and as I made my way through this beautiful, unbelievable garden, I was walking through this field of flowers that were waist high, and I remember feeling what it was like to push my little eight-year-old legs through this field of waist-high flowers, and then I started to notice that as I could feel that happening, I was simultaneously hovering above them. And as I was astonished that this was happening and had no explanation of it, at the same time, it didn't matter for some reason, because the love that I was feeling held in was just more of a present experience. And I can just say that to you, because as an adult, I can look back and notice that you know, it was that kind of experience I was having. And as I was hovering above these flowers, I saw this figure in a white robe with a dark beard and dark hair, about shoulder length, motioning me towards him with, you know, light shooting out of his eyes. And I didn't really move. And then I started to float towards this being. And as I got face to face with this being and I saw the light up close shooting out of its eyes, as an 8-year-old, I thought of like people in movies, scary movies, and they flip their eyes upside down. And in that moment, as I had that thought, I fell out of the garden and I fell through it. And I fell through the sky and slipped back into my body in a very jarring experience. And only when I fell back in my body did I realize I left my body, because up until that time it was just a very vivid dream. And when I fell back in my body, I saw the same figure, kind of like in a chalky white, what I now know to be etheric material, in my doorway, motioning me towards them, and when I looked, it disappeared. And I told my parents about this the next morning, and I was really astonished when my father told me that he had actually the same exact experience 25 years before I did in boot camp, and the details were almost, word for word, the same experience. And then for me, from that moment on, I would walk and I would see the same kind of being that I met in the garden. I would see about 10 of them walking all around me through my peripheral vision, and they were all in this chalky white material. And I was never scared of them, because I always felt the love from them that I felt from the garden. So any kind of doubt or any kind of human thought was completely irrelevant. And even that garden experience, as bizarre as that might be for the logical mind, that experience felt in some way so normal, and a level of normalcy that as an 8-year-old child I had never really found on Earth, that for me life was really a lot of anxiety. And then the experience of the garden was actually what comfort, you know, I had really never found. It was from that experience that through my life I slowly began to bring the comfort of the garden and that out-of-body experience into my present moment experience, which of course was a 20-year journey. It didn't happen overnight, and I spent the next 15 years of my life, you know, going through adolescence and every thought and attachment one can ever imagine. But it led me on this course to where now, as I speak to you in this moment, I'm able to more and more in all moments really live in the comfort I felt in the garden, but live it here on Earth. And so that, to me, is a celebration of this whole journey.
When you saw the beings, once you returned to Earth in the following periods of time, did they ever speak to you at all?
Well, when I was 18, they started speaking to me. I always saw them, and I always knew that they were my guides, and I never knew what a guide was. But I started to know things without needing to know why. Like, I knew that they were my guides without knowing what a guide was, and I knew that they were going to teach me things, but I didn't know what and when. Mm. And when I was 18, they started speaking to me. And even when they started speaking to me, I didn't know who they were. Like, the first thing they said to me was, you know, you're not just who you think you are. I go, who is this? And then, of course, they started appearing to me in visions. They started manifesting to me in energetic form in front of me. And I sat a lot of times in my bedroom at my parents' house. And for 10 years, I had conversations and dialogues with ascended masters and archangels who basically began to teach me about life from the perspective of outside the third dimension, because I realized that it was... The reason it was happening to me is because my specific purpose was to take the idea of what it's like to live outside the third dimension and allow myself to live like that within the third dimension. And then, of course, my work became to help other people awaken to how they can live within the third dimension without having to seek something outside of it. And, you know, the 10-year process of speaking to these guides, and all of them had different lessons and teachings, and you know, one by one they would introduce themselves, and there was Melchizedek and Saint Germain and Archangel Michael, and then of course it went to Buddha and Ganesh and Babaji, and there's about 20 different people that I've 20 different beings that I've worked with, and it took on a very interesting journey where my life was, I was living my life as a seemingly normal person, and as I was living my life, I was having dialogues with Ascended Masters, where as I was doing things, they were pointing out things to me, not what I should do, but they were just showing me why I was doing what I was doing. Like, they would never tell me, you should do this. They would just say, be aware that this is why you're doing it. And that became really intriguing to me, not that there was something I needed to do, but just be aware that as you make this decision, this is what is causing you to make that choice.
Right.
And that was really quite a breakthrough. And then, of course, even when I got to a place of thinking like, okay, I talk to Ascended Masters and angels, and I'm that kind of guy, and I do that work for other people, just when I think it's like, okay, I can allow that to be normal, it always changes.
Yeah.
As it should be. And one of the things that happened to me, which I wanted to share with you, was they said one day, and this is probably about 8 years ago, we want to show you something. And so they took me into a meditation, and I went up into the Akashic Records, and, you know, which to me, and the way I saw it, looked like almost a Lincoln Memorial with these white pillars.
Yeah.
And I went up, and there was this big table, and all these Ascended Masters and Archangels were standing there, next to each other. There's Mother Mary and Jesus and Melchizedek and, you know, all the archangels. There's a whole group of people. And then, of course, I walk up, which I thought was kind of funny. It's kind of like being invited to a gourmet potluck, and I'm the one bringing napkins.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, here I am, guys. And they said, we want to show you something. And they reach underneath their chins, and what I thought were their faces became these masks. And then when they lifted up their masks, they all became me. And I didn't and it was profound, but I didn't know why. And they said to me what I'll say to you, which is, if you in this moment were to go back to your childhood and visit you as a child wouldn't recognize you as its evolution or its future incarnation. You as a child would view you as everything it's not in this present moment, and so therefore it would see you as an angel. And they said, we are not only what you're becoming, we are what you have already become, and we have stepped back into the present moment to visit ourselves in spiritual childhood. And so it was in that moment that even my notion of what guides were expanded to a level of awareness and reason that really went beyond the concepts, and I realized that my guides, our angels, are really here to escort us through the realm of self into the realization that they are just an aspect of what we already are. And that's really where my work has really transitioned into.
Were they involved in what you refer to as profound spiritual awakenings at the early ages of 18 and 28?
Right. I'm sorry, ask it again, I'm sorry.
Did you not hear that?
Yeah, I didn't hear the first part, I'm so sorry.
Okay, I'll repeat it. You have referred to what you called your profound spiritual awakenings when you were 18 and 28, and I wondered if the same spiritual beings were involved in that particular period of your life.
Oh, absolutely. 18 is when they started speaking to me, and 28 is when when the work started to change, where I had the realization that these guides are me and I am them. And of course, there was still the sense of there being this me that is separate from the world. And at 28 was when the work started to really change and mature into a realization of what only I could be resides in the space of all things. And so there was this letting go of the need. It wasn't like a disidentification. It was letting go of the compulsion to identify as being something particular, that I started to watch that it was only my mind that it was grabbing onto something to identify with, when really I became, like everything else, the space of infinite potential, that in any moment I am appearing as I am needed to appear in whatever way brings wholeness to every moment. And it was in that way that I really was, in some ways, let off the hook spiritually, because up until that point, my mind was really confusing and really projecting things like all minds do, like there's something special for me to do and there's something important to help heal the planet, instead of realizing that the planet as I see it has actually been manifested from within me for me to be able to have a deeper relationship with all of the aspects of me that are still fragmented. And so I began to live in service as a way of getting over the self and serving the planet. And I realized that awakening and serving was the only way for me to heal the planet. And so it was kind of an interesting relationship in there where it wasn't about I have something to do and I must do that, because the focus of even that was just my mind trying to escape the present moment. So very different degrees of awakenings, and even, you know, nowadays, every day there's a different awakening. And it's just, you know, it could be me falling in love with my blender, or me seeing a tree smile at me, or even me, you know, waving at a dog that I walk past when I'm walking in my neighborhood. I mean, and there's never an end to it. And just like there's never an end to the thoughts in one's mind, we can only just be okay with it and allow peace to arise in every experience. And so,
right. So what would be your advice to someone who wanted to know how to uplift their present state of consciousness?
What I would say to them is that an answer is never truly an answer if followed by more questions. That the answer can only truly arise when we allow, the answer can truly only arise as your, you know, as your experience within yourself, by allowing the questions to disappear. And so the questions are always going to point, literally the answers that we're looking for are just going to return us to the present moment. And the best thing that we can do is allowing the questions to disappear. And as they disappear, as we let go of the questions and the need to know anything, those emotions that are stirred up are what we're actually in need of making peace with. And so we let go of the questions, we allow the emotions to rise, to come and to go, and whatever feelings happen to arise, we bless and we learn to love, and we learn to open up our arms as wide to those feelings of anxiety and fear as much as we open to love and abundance. And when we can love the anxiety, the fear, and the uncertainty and the doubt equal to how we love the certainty, the abundance, and the love, then we will find ourselves not trying to chase the masters that have already awakened. We will realize what's always been awake within us.
Right. So what is it you believe we are when we are beyond the body?
Well, I believe that everything is already, I believe everything exists all in one moment. Because it's, of course, the mind that, of course, frames things in moments in time, of course, because we're in this dimension where time exists. So there's no reason to reject that because it exists here. But I believe that we are all the various and infinite expressions of truth, the various faces of God. Or one way that I've had it explained to me from the Ascended Masters, which I think is kind of a humorous way of looking at it, is that when angels take naps in heaven, they dream themselves into reality, incarnating as one of the infinite faces of God. And so every time an angel goes to sleep, it gets a chance to play in the reality of Earth as one of us. And so we're all just really angels in disguise. We're all truly just the expression, the infinite expression of wholeness, the infinite expression of truth. We're all just, we are all the vast and infinite expressions of what formless nature can't truly ever be defined. And so we're just a celebration of that.
I'll certainly go along with that. You help people to achieve what they want. How do you interpret the laws of attraction in that case?
Because I think that the laws of attraction at a very deep level, if we go beyond the surface, you know, this, there's been a lot of information about the laws of attraction, and it's great, because it's great that everyone can be talking about the laws of attraction and realize that there's something deep within themselves that can help them take the pressure off themselves. There's nothing worse in life than having someone put the pressure on themselves to think that they themselves, as the egoic version of who they are, have to do everything. But I think on the deepest levels of the law of attraction, the deepest levels is actually living in that level of truth to realize that we don't do anything. That what we're actually here to do is one thing, which is literally to live in the open spaces that will allow the abundance of our true nature to manifest towards us. And that in the laws of attraction, we don't necessarily have to visualize what we want, because that which is already awake within us knows everything we want. It already knows everything you could ever want before you've even imagined it. All we have to do is know that what exists in your present moment reality is the spiritual homework that is yet to be complete, that whatever feelings are arising as you interact with different people at your job or at home, people can't make you feel anything. You can only feel the emotions that are stored within yourself. And people have been manifested into your reality because you are in need of feeling those emotions to make peace with them, because those are some emotions that in the past we haven't necessarily embraced, we've rejected. And so we have to realize that everything will be brought to us in the exact moment we're ready and able to responsibly handle it. And all we can do is say, if it's not here right now, I still must be in need of looking in my present moment and making peace with whatever's here. And sometimes the best teachers in our life are those people who are the hardest to love. And so we just learn to tolerate those that trigger us. We learn to love all that is. And we learn that in life we're either finding something beautiful in one thing or one circumstance, or life turns into an impromptu healing session. And we just spend time living in that space, and life will inherently bring us everything that we could ever need when it's time.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's the depth of the law of attraction versus using the universe as some sort of catalog or, you know, some sort of catalog to place our order. Because, you know, truly, whenever we say to the universe, I would like this or I would like that, what we're actually really saying to the universe is, I'd like to be whole, because the me that imagines having that is the me that's whole. And so a lot of people say, I want this, and then a lot of things in their life start to get shaken up. Those things are shaken up so that they can actually discover the wholeness that's already there. So it's kind of an interesting thing with the law of attraction.
Now, part of some of your presentations is talking about something that really interests me. You talk of disengagement of the ego. Now, I firmly believe that we certainly have to put the ego in its place. Tell us what your views are about that.
To me, that the way that we put our ego in the place is by accepting it. One of the things I learned from the Ascended Masters is that the ego is truly incapable of accepting the present moment. Is the ego is incapable of accepting presence, and yet it is the heart that is designed to accept the ego into presence. And so what it is that as long as there's a body, there will always be an ego. There is a notion that we have to destroy the ego to become enlightened, and that is no more of a goal-oriented journey as much as anyone else in separation trying to run towards the lottery or the home that they think that will complete them. It just happens to have a spiritual context. The reality of what I've come to realize and what my experience is that the only way to truly balance the ego and to allow it to live in the harmony with the body and the heart is to be able to allow the ego to be the one thing that you're willing to embrace and love versus change. That whatever it says to you is not necessarily relevant. In fact, it's completely made up, and it being made up can be just like one being charmed by the imagination of a child. If a child were to tell you a fantasy or a story, and if you were to take that fantasy totally seriously, and you were to follow that story as absolute truth, your life might be a little distorted. But if you're able to know that what the child is telling me is just a momentary expression of innocent creativity, then you would be able to admire the child in its innocence in the same way you can actually admire your own ego like a child. And so it's when you can look at your mind and realize that my mind in a spiritual journey has absolutely nothing to offer me when it offers me answers or questions. When my mind has questions, there are no answers to the questions. When my mind has answers, those answers are not necessarily relevant, because it's coming from a place in me that is connected to recognizing forms as being separate from what I am. And that's what the ego is good at doing. It's good at saying, okay, this is a table, this is a couch, this is a carpet. And it's wonderful. It labels things. And it's wonderful to be alive in a reality like this. It's wonderful to be in a reality where we can do these magic tricks, like seem like we're moving and have relationships and eat food. And these are all wonderful experiences. But when we can allow them to just be experiences like that, knowing that it is the one within all that is experiencing itself, then we can stay in a place of balance and truly being able to enjoy the experience through a moment of presence versus the enjoyment of one moment, and then, of course, the mind saying, okay, well, I want more of that, or what's next?
Yes.
So I think that the best way to integrate an ego is through accepting and loving the ego. In the same way that we learn to accept and love the world by learning to tolerate it, there's absolutely no difference.
Right. So why does silencing the mind enable one to open the heart?
Because what happens is that when the mind is active, and it's not necessarily, and when the mind is active, and it's when your attention is given to the activity of the mind, then we're engaged in thought. And when that happens, imagine your mind like a printing press that gets plugged in. And when it's plugged in like a printing press, the energy that it needs to run like a printing press when you're engaged with your mind is actually siphoning energy away from your body, prohibiting your body from giving all the energy to healing the wounds of the past and healing the physical wounds or healing the physical things that arise, you know, just in our day-to-day activities. And so what happens is that when the mind is engaged, the heart stays shut, and the heart is basically waiting for the mind to stop so it can open. When the heart opens, you are having an opportunity to experience all that you are through the reality of your emotions. And yet, that can't necessarily happen because all the energy that you need to allow your heart to open is really what the mind uses to be active. And so when we get into a practice of silence, it's not necessarily from a position of, I need to silence my mind, because then your ego puts on a spiritual costume of thinking there's something you need to do. There are many people I've worked with who have meditated for 20, 30, 35 years, and it becomes nothing more than a technique that they've perfected. The true spiritual journey of silence is the practice of becoming extremely comfortable as one can ever imagine being, in the space of silence, which is truly from the place of letting all your questions go. So it's being comfortable in the silence, which is all thoughts that come and go, I just let come and go. All questions and answers that come and go, I let come and go. Because I wish for all the energy to be given to my body to help open the heart so that I can feel what it's like to be what I am. So it's only through a practice of silence can all the energy be given to the body to open the heart so that you can feel what you are.
So does silencing the mind, which is the ego, how does that lead to physical wellness?
Physical wellness? Well, because when the mind is silent, and it's not really, when we speak of silencing the mind, it's not something that someone, you know, it's not something that someone says, well, I'm going to now silence my mind. I want to be specific in, it's not that you silence your mind, but you allow the mind to become silent. Or actually, you allow your awareness to find the silence that always exists within you. And so, because if we say silence the mind, then that becomes another activity for someone to put on their spiritual list of, okay, I'm going to manifest today, and then I'm going to work on silence tomorrow. Really, silence is, in this moment, where is the space in you that is already silent? Where is the space in you that is always silent? And when you find that space, all of the energy, instead of being given to the mind to run the thoughts of the ego like a printing press, all of the energy is being given to your body, and it can utilize all the energy to heal the wounds of the past. It can heal all the physical complications, which of course are just manifestations of repressed emotions that haven't been dealt with. And the healing can begin. Most people that go through a profound spiritual healing will of course do it at retreat centers, where after the healing they can actually go and have quiet time and journal or meditate. And it's hard to do this when after a healing session we return to our day-to-day life. And yet I think on a deeper level, it's perfect, because to be able to find the silence that already exists within you in a busy, noisy world is exactly the best way to find within you a way to live in that space. I mean, to sit there and meditate is wonderful, but why should the meditation ever end? That space within you never goes away. It's just your awareness that loses sight of it when the phone rings when you're meditating. So I think oftentimes the time that we meditate isn't really meditation. It's the moment the phone rings and disturbs you from your meditation that it really begins.
All right. Would you say that as I'm calling it, using your words, silencing the mind, is actually bringing you to the point where you can live in what they call the now.
Well, absolutely, because when you find within you what's already silent, what within you that is already silent can only be present. And the present is what we call the now, you know, and there's many people that will talk about that, whether it's Eckhart Tolle with, you know, all of his books that are wonderful texts, or, of course, you know, Ram Dass's book that he came out many years ago, Be Here Now. All of these things are simply pointing to presence. Presence isn't something that you can necessarily try to be. Presence is something. Presence is the quality that the silence within you is already being. And so what I found very helpful was I didn't have to become silent. I didn't have to try to be present. I just had to find the parts in me that were already really good at it. And then I started becoming friends with those parts of me. And then those parts in me became what I am. And so it helped me to do less work, because if you were asking Matt Kahn 10 years ago, Matt Kahn, it's time for you to be present, or it's time for you to be silent. Well, that was like an anxiety attack, because there was no part in me that was ready to be present. But over time, I became aware that there was something in me that was always silent, always present, always saying yes to all of my experiences, as ridiculous as they were. Whenever I wanted to do something from the ego, or I wanted to do some things that I've already learned from but I thought I needed to do over and over again, as we all do, there is this in me that only says yes in silence.
Yeah.
And I learned to befriend that in me that always says yes, and I realized it was so easy to befriend that space in me that is eternally present and silent, because it actually is what I am, and it's what we all are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the best advice is find that within you that even in the noisiest moments, even in the most painful of tragedies, where is that space in you that is always and already silent, always present, and already saying yes to this experience, even when you're trying to reject it?
Right. Now, at a time when I'm certain there are many people who are trying to get a very good link with their higher self, how would you propose that they can order their life in such a way that they're living in the light?
Well, what I would say is that the way that one can be able to live into the light is to realize it's the only thing that truly exists. One of the biggest ways that we are confined from this is that in our minds we create a conceptual notion or idea that the light is only things that feel good. And, you know, the light, when we do feel the purity of light, it does feel, it's an experience of such vastness and such amazement. At the same time, the light is an expression of infinite possibility. And so the way that we experience the light, or how we can awaken the light within us, is to realize the light is what's eternally present and silent within all spaces. It is just on this planet, it is the interacting with the egoic reality that sometimes can distract us. So even when we're interacting with things that don't seem to be of the light, it's not that it's not of the light, it's just that its form is manifested in a way to trigger what's already stuck in each of us. And I can only feel the qualities of what isn't the light if it's stuck within me. And so if everything is the light, the loving universe must have only brought this person or circumstance into my life because it's the everything I must be willing to face right now as I continue to grow. So as I allow these feelings to arise from whatever my experience of something not being in the light is, I allow myself to get through the moment with as much peace as possible. Peace not with anything you have to do with, you know, other than your willingness. Your willingness to allow the experience to be what it is without needing to change it. And it's from that experience that you actually begin to become the light that fills all spaces. And when you live as the light that fills all spaces, you no longer have a need to change or disturb a world that's already awake, that's already present, that's already enlightened.
Yes.
And so one of the ways we can do that is to realize there is no problem. If there seems to be a problem, it's only because I'm in the midst of healing something that my mind is labeling a problem, or my mind is identifying a problem when it is really just something that I have yet to be comfortable with. And the only thing we can do is allow ourselves to be the peace that gracefully gets through every moment. Right. If we were to listen to the grace within all of us, the grace within all of us would simply say one sentence, this too shall pass.
Right.
We breathe deeply,
now,
this too shall pass.
I'm sure our listeners would believe that they have spirit guides.
Right.
I believe you have an opinion on how one might get in touch with them, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be interested. Perhaps you would tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I think that eventually, even when working with your spirit guides, the journey of working with your spirit guides is to guide you towards, you know, through the realm of self, to the realization that they are simply expressions of that presence that you are. So, in fact, you are your spirit guides, and most people identify themselves egoically, so, of course, their first interactions with spirit guides seem to be something outside of them or seem to be something that takes on a different form than they are. But I think the greatest way that we can come in contact with our spirit guides, because anything your spirit guides will ever say to you is going to return you to presence and return you to love. Loving all things, tolerating all disturbances, and being present. So if we just practice what they would say anyway, we find ourselves opening up to that type of deep connection. Oftentimes we make connection with our spirit guides, but it's the mind that filters the information in a way that's still ego-driven and serving self. And so there are times when people have come to me and they're talking to their guides and they're going, my guides are telling me I'm here to do something really important and I'm here to change the world by doing this. And what often happens is that the mind is actually filtering pure information into a way that only makes sense to the belief system of that person in that moment. And so what I think is that people don't necessarily need to be in contact with their spirit guides in order for their spiritual path to evolve. They have to realize the spirit guides are there to remind you of loving all things, tolerating all disturbances, and finding within you what is already present. And if that becomes your lifelong practice, then you're going to be able to bring to you all of those messages from your guides and angels that are of the purest form. And if you're already living those qualities and embodying those qualities outside of a conceptual mind, then the guides are just there standing around. I mean, the purpose is to guide you through the realm of self. And so oftentimes spirit guides will pop up when we're the most lost in our own minds.
Yeah. Right.
So, I say that because, you know, that really contradicts a lot of messages and things out there, and I'm not really doing it to intentionally contradict anyone else's opinion, but I also believe that if we're going to talk in spiritual terms, let us talk about what is already present within ourselves, what is already awake within ourselves. And even something like a spirit guide and reaching to connect with a spirit guide is always just going to be something for the mind to focus on that keeps us from being present.
Yes. Now, I believe many people already believe that they are on a journey into oneness, and you have an opinion about that because you believe that we are already the peace and the love that we're searching for.
Right. It's just the journey is actually allowing ourselves to realize that. So the journey is actually the exhausting of the personal will, if we're still holding on to the personal will, thinking that there's a journey. One of the things that I don't know if it's as much of an opinion that I have as much as I can only share my direct experiences, because my truest opinion is that whatever experience people have, I love to hear about, and I believe is completely true for where they're at and absolutely valid, and there's nothing that I've experienced that is any more valid than anyone else's experiences. I can only just share my experiences and the grace within all experiences that there's something in my experience that will be something that you can learn from, and there's something that, you know, Mike has experienced as he interviews me that will be something I can learn from. And so I never forget that you are my teacher, Mike, and everyone listening is my teacher, and I can only share my life with the world, and as the world shares its life with me, I can only then be able to be open to what else more I can be aware of. But I really think in terms of a journey, the one thing I realized in my own experience was if there was one hope I had for any seeker wishing to find their way home, it's truly to burn the map you're following and realize where you already are. Just burn the map you're following and realize where you already are, because the journey is you will take a million steps and you will get tired, and then you will get back up and say, no, I've got to keep going. And the whole purpose of the journey is that there is no place to walk towards in the journey. And the whole point is that the journey is as long as it takes you to be completely exhausted. And when you collapse into one place and you can't walk another single step, then you start to find presence. And that's, to me, the real part of the journey. But that's really no journey at all. So there's really not necessarily a step-by-step process that people can ever have in the journey other than what they're willing to let go of.
Yeah. Now, you list yourself as a spiritual healer. The normal concept of a healer may be somebody who lays on hands or does some familiar healing like that. But I suspect yours is a little different. So can you tell us what you actually term a spiritual healing?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I started calling myself a spiritual healer, you know, when I started doing this work many years ago, and I think it's really transitioned to being, you know, a spiritual teacher. And I think what's interesting is that as I speak to people, as I speak to me, that which is eternally present in me, through my words, transmits a frequency of energy into the person. And as they absorb it into their field, you know, what is in the way is to be unraveled. And so that the presence within the space I am finds the, you know, the present space within who they are, and that those two present spaces come together as one. And so the healing work that is done is, of course, to find the blockages in the physical body, which, of course, are the physical manifestations where the unresolved and repressed emotions exist, to be able to unravel some of those physical manifestations so that people can actually bring to the surface the emotions they haven't dealt with. And so that's the work I really do, is to guide people through unraveling the physical manifestations, understanding the dharma or the truths of what wisdom hides within dealing with the emotions, and being able to process those emotions properly so that we can release the blockages to find what is eternally present in all things and all beings. So, and yet the work I do now, because even as I speak to people over the phone nationwide, across the world, and even who come in person for sessions, I sit here and I speak to them. And as I speak to them, the energy work happens by itself. But as I'm speaking, I'm literally just giving them a dialogue, and I'm giving them an ongoing conversation of what they are actually receiving and realizing energetically. So it's really guiding people through the path of awakening.
Included in your upcoming book, which you call The Pathway In, Inspirational Messages for Peaceful Healing. Would you perhaps you'd like to tell us a little bit about your book and how it's coming along?
Yeah, the book is really coming along quite nicely. Of course, we had to put most of our attention into our Awakening the Earth Angel CD, which has been really taken a lot of our focus. The Awakening the Earth Angel CD, of course, is a CD that contains all the energetic frequencies that one would receive in a healing session and coming to our many events and satsangs that we do across the United States and even now around the world that we're starting to do. And in the CD, what happened was we had an event where people asked questions, and in delivering the answers that spontaneously arose within me were these energies that were very palpable, and people were having tremendous benefit, integrating and having these really vivid experiences. And when we listened to the recording of the event, we actually could feel the energy coming through the recording. So we made the CD possible and put it out there so that in between sessions, or that for that people that can't come in person, or for that people that haven't had a chance to work with me over the phone, can at least immerse themselves in this energy, because it's this energy which is locked into the frequency of every answer that allows one to spend more time and an easier time finding within them where that space of presence is, or to find within them where that space of silence is. And we've had people giving us all sorts of feedback at, you know, how much it's helped resolve relationships in their lives, how much it's improved relationships in their lives, how much it's helped heal physical illnesses, how much it's helped them sleep. And so it's been an absolute honor to put this product, Awaken the Earth Angel in You, which is available through our website at truedivinenature.com. And it's just an amazing honor to be able to put a product out there that we can in turn offer to people as a way of helping them to find within them, which is eternally true and present. And, of course, the book is now going to become our focus now that the CD's been put out there. And the book will probably come out sometime late next year. And we're just trying to balance the book, which is another addition and another supplement and another way of accenting the Awakening the Earth Angel in You CD. But at the same time, we're just trying to balance the book with all of our speaking engagements and all the other various projects that are coming our way.
Right. We've been talking a little about your book, but perhaps it's a good time in the program to tell us something about your CD.
Well, yeah, the Awakening of the Earth Angel and You CD, as I just spoke about, is a CD that really assists in the awakening process, because what will really help people is not necessarily answers to questions are great, but the best thing one can ever do is spend time in a space of presence, to spend time connecting into that space within them and in all things that is already present. And, of course, the energy within the CD is what provides that. And, you know, it's just an honor to be able to assist in the awakening of humanity. Of course, the awakening of humanity can only be something one can assist with as a celebration of what's already awakened within themselves. And so at our website, truedivinenature.com, there's information about the CD, Awakening the Earth Angel in You. We haven't yet gained the capability of being able to have people purchase the CD through our website, but you can also call our offices at 253-639-0770. And Julie at our office, my wonderful, wonderful soul partner, will always be there to talk to you about how to get the CD to you wherever you are in the world. And, of course, she's also there to answer questions about our private sessions and all of our upcoming events as we continue to book events all across the nation and really throughout the world.
Right, yeah. So you will say peace is what we are, but you also want to tell us why we cannot find what we already are.
Well, because what we happen to find is we happen to find forms that are expressions of what we are. So we can find an expression of what we are, but it's kind of like trying to find glasses on your face that you're already wearing. The real question people should ask themselves is, how do you know you've found what you're looking for? And usually what will tell you that you know what you found what you're looking for is your mind, who has a concept or an idea of what it is looking for, or what will the feeling be in my body that I imagine when I find what I'm looking for. And when that arrives, then there's the conclusion that I must have found it. But truly, these are only conceptual ideas the mind makes up. So there's no way of ever really knowing that you found what you're looking for. And in fact, if it's truly impossible outside of the mind to know when you found what you're looking for, maybe perhaps you are what you're looking for. And maybe on a simpler level, maybe as I look for these things that can't be found, I have to ask myself, how much peace am I feeling in my body as I look for these things that seem impossible to find? And if I'm not feeling a lot of peace in my body, how could I ever realize peace is what I am when the whole point of the journey is putting me in search of something that I seem to be separate with? And so I think that part of the deeper journey of awakening is destroying the journey, to be able to say, okay, what I'm looking for I already am, and what I am is an expression of infinite potential, of love, of peace, of wholeness, of harmony. So if I just allow more peace, more wholeness, more harmony, more love into my life, and whatever I have a problem with in my life, if I just bring more peace and love and tolerance to those things, maybe over time the dilemmas in my life will change by themselves. And it's only when people really trust that on a deep level can that really happen. And that's, of course, the work that I help people with. And that is it's a very simple idea. But with every person I work with, everyone has such a specific background, and everyone has their own individualized experiences, that working one-on-one is really the best way so that I can address all the specifics of what has happened to someone. Because when we address the specifics of what has happened to us in childhood, in previous incarnations, and in all these different things, when you can address it for the person that they happen to think they are, you give them the space to awaken in that moment. And so that's really the benefit of doing the one-on-one sessions we do, both over the phone and in person.
Right. I can see the value in one-to-one sessions with you and your clients. What do you actually do when you run your workshops?
Well, the workshops, it's a direct transmission of presence to where in the workshops there are sometimes exercises where we will put people in groups and in pairs, and we can design exercises where people can have direct experiences of what the various teachings are talking about. But most of the times it is one where as the questions come up or as the topic is being talked about, and I really never know what the topic is until I start speaking, the energy of presence within all of us becomes very palpable. And it's almost as if, as I speak, people are placed into a meditative state. It's almost as I speak, people can oftentimes slip into that meditative state. It is not uncommon. Yeah. It's actually very common for most people to come to the sessions and to just close their eyes. And I tell people, you can listen if you wish, but what I'd really hope for is for you to really understand what it is you're feeling. Like someone came to me once after a satsang and said, there was this one thing you said that I didn't quite understand, and all I asked them was, what did you feel when I said that?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the gift.
Yeah.
Because it's the mind that always has questions. And it's perfectly understandable that it has questions. But when something happens that you're questioning, what was the feeling that you felt? That's the gift. Whether coming into contact with something that you haven't yet accepted, coming into contact with something that you're always rejecting and haven't made peace with, or with a sense of connection that you can realize is what you are. That's the reality of what's really being given. And so many people will walk away with many different things. Some still with their questions, some completely letting go of their questions, some within the exercises we do person to person or within groups will have realizations, and of course in group settings everyone can bring up their stuff and release their stuff, and we can all hold the space for that. But really all of the workshops and individual sessions, or even the experience people have in groups and one-on-one with the Awakening the Earth Angel CD, it's really offering a space to provide people whatever they're ready for, whatever they're ready to experience in their path. And so I can just hold the space for that.
I have to conclude the program at 5 minutes to the hour, which means we've got literally 2 or 3 minutes left. I want to close by introducing my next guest. So in the minute or so that's left, is there anything you would like to confirm with regards to your site address or anything of that nature?
People are interested in more information about what we've spoken about today and any more information on the work that Julie and myself do, the website is truedivinenature.com. At truedivinenature.com, you can find more information on the Awakening the Earth Angel and Use Healing CD, as well as a list of all of our upcoming events across the nation and even around the world, and even about individual sessions that are as energetically palpable over the phone as they are in person. It's been an absolute pleasure with you, being with you, Mike, and I want to thank all the listeners who have been with us right now.
Right. That's great. Matt, I have to thank you for being a wonderful speaker. You've made the show very easy for me, and it's been very, very interesting. So I have to say goodbye to you here, and thank you for joining me on the program. Thank you very much,
thank
Matt.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, I will just tell you that next Friday I have a guest, Rini Jorgensen. She's a philosopher and research member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. So if that doesn't grab your imagination, nothing else will. Thank you for being with me for this program. It's been very enjoyable. So I will say God bless you all. Hope to be with you next Friday. Goodbye.